How does a ship full of people end up empty and abandoned with no sign of struggle and all the supplies left behind? Was it cursed? Was it pirates? Could it be that one of Maritime's favorite mysteries was just the result of panic and poor decision-making? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I'm a hopeless romantic when it comes to long-distance travel. Offer me a cross-country train ticket or a boarding pass on a transatlantic cruise, and I'll be packing my steamer trunk and daydreaming of finally writing that novel as the country goes whizzing by out the window, or the dolphins swim playfully in the wake of the ship. But Lord knows, by day three of that trip, I'll be longing for solid ground and rueing the day I ever thought it would be fun to be trapped on a speeding vessel with a bunch of strangers and screaming children, no doubt. Maybe then I'd finally understand why there are so many stories of haunted ships forever floating on the sea in the veil between our world and the great unknown. Ghost vessels that once held a group of souls who thought rooming together for an extended period of time with no escape was a good idea. Today, for the first time ever, strangers, I will be featuring an interview with an expert on the topic. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
So I'm Monty, and I'm here to talk about the Mary Celeste.
Tell the people who you are in relation to me.
I am Tony Award.
You don't have to say that. It's okay. Say whatever you want.
I am Tony Award winner Daisy Egan's son.
Goofball. Okay, so he's not exactly an expert. I harbor no illusions about that. I'm not one of those parents who goes around claiming their solidly average kid is a genius. But he did come home from school one day excited to tell me about something mysterious that he learned, and he wanted to share it with me because he knows my podcast's premise, and who am I to turn my back on this type of opportunity? If it's a story that befuddles and, more importantly, interests a 10-year-old, it seems like a worthwhile topic to explore. And I thought it was kind of cool to let him tell me what he remembered, and I'd fill in the story around it. So, tell me everything you know about the Mary Celeste.
So, some stuff that I know, that when they started the voyage, they were starting from Newport to some place in England.
Newport, Rhode Island?
Yeah.
In truth, the Mary Celeste took off from New York City, but I'm giving the kid a pass here because A, he's 10, and B, do you remember how much stuff you had to learn back in fifth grade? It was a lot. Plus, New York and Newport sound enough alike. Also, we live in Rhode Island, so I'm sure there's a part of him that thought the reason he was being taught about a random ghost ship was because it originated from Rhode Island, which is fair. So back off, lady! Don't DM my son. Also, they were headed for Italy. But to be fair, who can keep the countries of Europe straight? There are like 15 countries in England alone, I'm pretty sure. Don't Google that.
So when they started, I completely forget the name before it got renamed the Mary Celeste.
The ship was formerly named the Amazon, and according to the History Channel website, was renamed, quote, after a series of mishaps, including the sudden illness and death of its first captain and a collision with another ship in the English Channel, end quote. But as rapper and all-around douchebag P. Diddy will no doubt tell you, you can change your name all you want, but that doesn't mean bad stuff won't happen to you. Or, in his case, that you won't stop doing bad stuff. Anyway.
So, him, his wife, and his daughter, mm-hmm. his baby daughter, mm-hmm. all went on the Mary Celeste carrying raw alcohol.
The him he's referring to is Captain Benjamin Briggs, an experienced seaman, no laughing, an expert mariner who'd spent most of his adult life at sea. And just to be clear here, folks, the baby daughter and mother weren't carrying raw alcohol. The ship was carrying 1,700 barrels of crude alcohol, which was not, as I assumed, Jägermeister, but was actually crude alcohol as in industrial alcohol, or as the expert just put it, raw alcohol. Indeed, apparently the crude alcohol was meant for fortifying Italian wine, which I guess wasn't fortified enough on its own. Why Captain Briggs and his wife and infant daughter were on this journey, I'm not entirely sure. Let's face it, I'm not even partially sure. Maybe Briggs told his wife he had to take a business trip to Italy and she was like, LOL, not by yourself, you don't. Fun fact, if you schedule your vacation around work, you can write the whole thing off. Please check with your accountant before you try to write off your midnight minibar raid. Also, it's worth noting that Briggs and his wife had a young school-aged son whom they'd left with his grandmother in order to continue his schooling, which at first glance really sucks for the kid. Monty would be pissed if Kurt and I fucked off to Europe and left him with his grandparents just so he could keep doing fifth grade. Like, I guarantee you whatever he could learn on a trip to Italy would be at least equally as valuable as, for example, the lesson in which he learned facts about the Mary Celeste. Watch me get sent to the principal's office for this. To be perfectly clear, I love my son's teachers and his school. I think it's pretty great, honestly, that this was one of the lessons they chose to teach. I don't know why it was, but I'm no education expert, so I trust that his teachers had their reasons. I write comedy. Sometimes I make jokes about people and institutions I have deep respect for. I trust that adults with critical thinking skills will get it. Monty was right about one super important thing. The story about the Mary Celeste is a fascinating one.
The ship left from Newport,
New York.
January 27th.
Okay.
Around that time.
It was November 7th. Potato, potato. What
they
year?
Left. I completely forget the year.
Okay. It was 1872.
But when the crew from Boston found the ship, found Mary Celeste, the raw alcohol, half of it, was completely evaporated.
I don't know why Italy needed to import their alcohol from the States. Was alcohol such a rare commodity that it couldn't be found anywhere else in Europe? This seems awfully impractical and expensive, especially given the likelihood of evaporation. It's not like the casks or barrels or whatever were made of food-grade industrial plastic or metal. They were wooden. And apparently some of the barrels were made from wood that is notoriously porous. And you know me, I'm no alcohol exporter, but it seems like common sense to not transport liquid in porous vessels, no?
When they went to search the captain's ship, the last log was February 11th.
It was actually November 25th, 1872. So a little less than 3 weeks after the ship had set sail from New York. Okay, strangers, just so you know, I'm not reveling in the task of pointing out how wildly inaccurate this whole story is. And I did get my son's permission to publish this episode, so it's not like I'm going tee-hee-hee behind his back. How long was the trip supposed to take?
So the trip was supposed to take about a month
and
or two. When they went to the captain's ship, the last log was February 11th, and it was like date log... The crew is starting a mutiny or something like that.
Whoa. Okay, so I tried to fact check this and couldn't find it. I'm not entirely sure where this information is coming from. Perhaps in the soup that is all the stuff he learned that day, the bisque got a little mixed up with the bouillabaisse, if you know what I mean.
And there were no lifeboats, no dollies.
Listen, even sailors need dollies. Who found the ship?
So, the guy's friend, he found him. The guy...
Captain?
The captain of the Mary Celeste's friend found the Mary Celeste.
Where did they find it?
They found it close to Boston's massive, like, port.
Wait a minute. So it left from Newport, Rhode Island. New York, New York. And it headed for England, right? Headed east for England.
Yeah.
Like a few weeks?
A few weeks after the last log.
And just in Boston.
And just in Boston. So the current took it towards Boston.
So 8 days after the Mary Celeste had sailed out of New York, Captain David Morehouse and his crew sailed on the De Grazia out of the same port. The Mary Celeste should have arrived in Italy days before December 4th, 1872, when Morehouse and his crew found the ship at sea 400 miles east of the Azores. So definitely not in Italy, and certainly not in Boston. Boston? What is even happening at my kid's school?
So the dollies were completely gone. The water thing was completely rusted. The water thing takes it out, takes water out.
Oh, the pump?
The pump takes water out of the ship, and that was completely rusted, and it didn't work.
Sort of. One of the ship's two pumps had been disassembled. According to the Smithsonian, quote, coal dust and construction debris could have fouled the ship's pumps, which would explain the disassembled pump found on the Mary Celeste. With the pump inoperative, Briggs would not have known how much seawater was in his ship's hull, which was too fully packed for him to measure visually, end quote. I can't find any information about the other pump, but the disassembled pump seemed to lend clues to some theories about what happened to the Mary Celeste and at least why there was no one on board, though not where everyone had disappeared to. But more on that later. Okay, so the De Grazia came upon the Mary Celeste 400 miles east of the Azores with her sails up and pretty much undamaged. And the crew of the De Grazia was like, ho there, or ahoy matey, or they signaled in cuneiform, or however ships used to communicate with each other, and there was no answer. Needless to say, this was unsettling. But the De Grazia crew sailed closer and continued to signal, and when they finally managed to board the Mary Celeste, they found her utterly abandoned.
And when they went up to captain's area, the bed had a little, had a baby imprint on it.
Ooh.
Yeah, there was the wife's jewelry, so it wouldn't have been pirates. Huh. If it were pirates, they would have taken the jewelry. But when they went up to the deck, they found bloodstains.
In an initial investigation, there were a couple of stains that were thought to have possibly been blood. One on the ship itself and one on the captain's sword. Indeed, some of the stories in the contemporary newspaper accounts announced that there was blood on the deck of the ship, but testing later found neither stain was, in fact, blood. And as we all know, once something is in print, as it were, it's hard to retract. What's most mysterious about this case is what the crew of the De Grazia didn't find aboard the Mary Celeste. There was no sign of foul play, no sign of pirates. Monty was right about that one. No sign of a struggle at all. It was as if all the people aboard the Mary Celeste had just blooped right off the earth, or sea, without warning. Except that one of the lifeboats was missing, and the rope tethering it to the ship looked to have been cut with a blade rather than having been properly unmoored. Properly unmoored is the name of my forthcoming memoir. Which meant that most likely, for some reason, everyone who'd been aboard the Mary Celeste felt compelled to board the lifeboat and get themselves away from the ship in a hurry. But what happened to that lifeboat and her passengers, no one could suss out. The De Grazia brought the empty ship ashore and petitioned for the salvage rights, which made some people's ears perk up and led to some suspicion cast on the captain and crew. That, along with the breathless announcements of bloodstains, which in fact turned out not to be bloodstains. Like, maybe it had been a plot and they'd somehow done away with everyone on the Mary Celeste just to claim the ship and its contents. What they'd be claiming, I don't know. It's not like the ship was dripping with jewels and gold. Ultimately, what the crew had to pay in legal fees defending their right to salvage the goods on the ship whittled away whatever their take would have been anyway. But while the enterprising crew of the De Grazia was busy claiming finders keepers, others were trying to solve the mystery of the vanished crew and passengers of the Mary Celeste. Some people thought the ship and its passengers might have been the victims of pirates. But, as Monty noted, those would have been pirates that didn't bother to take valuables from the ships they pirated, or, at the very least, the ships themselves. Maybe they were human trafficking pirates who just took people and ferreted them away to basements of pizza shops in Washington, D.C. Some people thought the passengers of the Mary Celeste had met their fate at the gaping maw of a sea monster or a giant octopus. But this would have had to have been a very discerning and tidy sea monster to not leave a single piece of the ship damaged. Like, it just very gently picked each person off the ship, one by one. Because the Mary Celeste was found near the Azores, naturally, some believe the disappearance of its crew and passengers has something to do with the lost city of Atlantis. For those of you who don't have my back catalog memorized, in my episode on the lost city of Atlantis, I laid out the theory that some believe the Azores Mountains, which lie off the west coast of North Africa, are all that's left of the once great city of Atlantis that sank into the sea. Never mind that the mountains sank long before human beings existed. It's one thing to get things wrong because maybe you're mixing up your facts. It's another thing altogether to just ignore facts. Some have floated the theory that the ship was a victim of the Bermuda Triangle, somehow, which makes even less sense than a meticulous sea monster or a mythical lost city at the bottom of the sea. Like, sure, the ship was in the Atlantic, but the Bermuda Triangle is about 2,500 miles away from where the ship was found abandoned. That's like saying someone disappeared in Las Vegas when they were last seen in New York City. And if you thought we'd get through the theories of what happened to the Mary Celeste without mentioning aliens, you must be new around these here parts. Blaming unexplained phenomena on aliens is nothing new. If some interpretations of ancient petroglyphs are to be believed, aliens have been a theme in our collective human experience since prehistoric times. There's not much to this theory other than, hey, maybe it was aliens. According to Inspired English Teaching, a practical guide for teachers by Keith West, quote, aliens might have abducted the captain and his crew. There was no sign of a struggle aboard the ship, so the aliens could have put them all in a trance. Nobody knows the reason for aliens abducting people, if indeed aliens exist. They may have wanted to experiment with the humans back on their own planet, end quote. And listen, it's not the way I would word something like this, especially not if the intended audience was school children. What are the children more likely to remember? No one knows the reason for aliens abducting people, and they may have wanted to experiment on the humans back on their own planet, or if indeed aliens exist. So, maybe now my kid's false memory is beginning to look a little less strange and unexplained. While I think it's fair to say that what my son might lack in memorization ability, he more than makes up for in creativity, baby imprints and bloodstains, whisperings of a mutiny, well, hold on to your butts, because it's about to get even more creative.
And about a month later, after they found the Mary Celeste, a dolly washed up on shore, and there was a man in there.
What's a dolly?
A dolly is like it's like a lifeboat.
So not, to be clear, baby dolls, like I first thought. I really like the image of a bunch of sailors carrying baby dolls. Darn it.
And there was a man in it? Alive?
Yeah. No, dead.
Where did it wash up to?
Washed up near Maine.
He had been on the Mary Celeste?
He had been on the Mary Celeste.
And he was dead.
It was probably the captain. It was probably...
They didn't know who it was?
They didn't know who it was.
Because he was, like, decomposed.
But he was encased in a flag. It was either Rhode Island's flag, the Boston's flag, or... the U.S. flag.
So what do they think happened? How did he... Why was he on this?
So people thought it was food poisoning. Some people thought that some of the crew drunk some of that raw alcohol. Raw alcohol is deadly.
Yeah.
And or they just left without any food on the dolly.
Uh-huh. Why was he wrapped in the flag? Do you think somebody wrapped him, or do you think
he was already dead.
So you think he was put on the dolly already dead?
Yes.
That's a weird use of a dolly, don't you think?
Yeah.
Do you think maybe they were trying to send a message?
Probably. They were probably trying to send it back to Newport.
Do you think, what kind of message do you think that would be?
Like, better watch out.
But it probably wasn't pirates.
Probably wasn't pirates, but there were bloodstains.
Again, just to be clear, there were no bloodstains, but the mix-up about the bloodstains is understandable given there was at least suspicion of bloodstains at one point. What I don't understand is where my son got the stuff about the guy wrapped in a flag washing up in a lifeboat in Maine. I looked everywhere for it, to the point where now if someone washes up on the coast of Maine wrapped in a flag, my internet search history means I'm gonna be suspect number one. I did finally stumble upon an entry about the Mary Celeste on a blog called Sentinel 63, which includes this. Quote, 5 months later, April 1873, five highly decomposed bodies tied to rafts washed up on the Spanish coast. According to reports, one of the bodies was wrapped in an American flag. The Mary Celeste's flag had been missing. Thus, it is quite possible, or even likely, that these bodies were from the Mary Celeste, and that the other five were eaten by marine creatures and never made it to land. If these bodies were from the Mary Celeste's lifeboat, maybe they ran aground on Formigas Bank during a storm and then used timbers from the ruined boat to construct two makeshift rafts. End quote. The author, however, offers no bibliography or sources, so it's difficult to say where they got this, but clearly it's a rumor that's floating around for some reason. At least my kid has the excuse of being 10. What's Sentinel 63's excuse? The tabloid papers of the time made hay out of the disappearance of the crew and passengers of the Mary Celeste, and lots of sensational stories ran filled with actual fake news, much of which stuck to the story of the Mary Celeste like stubborn barnacles. I am so sorry. Add to that, in 1884, Arthur Conan Doyle wrote a pretty racist short story titled J. Habakkuk Jephson's Statement, based loosely on the Mary Celeste. In the story, the white protagonist, Jephson, an American doctor, takes a trip on the Mary Celeste for his health. This was back when fresh air was thought to be a cure-all. The ship is bound for Portugal, but a few crew members have other ideas and kill almost everyone on board and steer the ship to Africa instead, whereupon they imprison Jephson. But Jephson happens to have an old stone that a black maid gave him back in America as a way of thanking him for fighting on the north side in the Civil War. The people in the town in which Jephson is imprisoned find out about the stone and think it's a sign that he should be their king. But, and this is according to the Arthur Conan Doyle Encyclopedia, the crew member from the Mary Celeste who had orchestrated the murder and hijacking, quote, explains he killed a lot of white people to punish them for their cruelty, and he wanted to become the king of Africa, end quote. The king of Africa. Anyway, in exchange for letting Jephson go free, he asks him to convince the people of the town that he should be their king. Jephson does this and is sent out to sea on a small boat where he's eventually rescued by the crew of a ship called the De Grazia. Apparently, to Doyle's own surprise, some people thought this was a true account. And some people included the Boston Herald, which apparently printed the entire story as though it were fact. Apparently, while not containing any mention of mutiny, as far as I could find, Captain Briggs' log had mentioned some worrisome rumblings coming from the bowels of the ship. Turns out raw alcohol is extremely flammable. Who knew? So, naturally, one theory as to what happened was that some of the highly flammable alcohol had leaked out of the porous barrels and caused an explosion, either by someone coming into the hold with a lit pipe or cigar, or, much more terrifyingly, just by barrels rubbing together. Evidence showed that around 300 gallons of alcohol had leaked out. That's a lot of alcohol. But surely, I hear you cry, if there had been an explosion fueled by hundreds of gallons of a major combustible, there would have been clear evidence of an explosion, right? How could this whole thing be such a mystery? Turns out, because science is magic, a massive explosion can, in fact, leave practically no evidence behind. In 2006, Dr. Andrea Sella of the University College London ran an experiment to prove this. According to a piece in the Daily Express, quote, Dr. Andrea Sella, UCL Chemistry, built a replica of the hold of the Mary Celeste. Using butane gas, he simulated an explosion caused by alcohol leaking from the ship's cargo. Instead of wooden barrels, he used cubes of paper. Setting light to the gas caused a huge blast, which sent a ball of flame upwards. Surely the paper cubes would be burned or blackened, or the replica hold damaged. Remarkably, neither happened. What we created was a pressure wave type of explosion, says Dr. Sella. There was a spectacular wave of flame, but behind it was relatively cool air. No soot was left behind, and there was no burning or scorching. Given all the facts we have, this replicates conditions on board the Mary Celeste. The explosion would have been enough to blow open the hatches and would have been completely terrifying to everyone on board. End quote. An explosion that leaves no trace behind? Cool, cool, cool. Totally not terrifying at all. And so, as much as we might want it to be a genteel giant octopus, pirates, or even aliens, in all likelihood, the folks aboard the Mary Celeste either smelled the fumes coming from the leaked alcohol and made haste off the ship onto a lifeboat, or, after the explosion that left no trace, they made haste onto a lifeboat, as that would have been the only safe place. Remember, they were in such a hurry that someone cut the rope that connected the lifeboat to the Mary Celeste. Unfortunately, though, in their haste, the crew didn't lower the sails, and while they all sat in the lifeboat waiting for danger to pass, their ship sailed away without them, along with all their food and water. What is particularly weird about all this is that Captain Briggs was supposed to be a master seaman. No laughing. Who'd spent most of his adult life at sea. Where did all his training and expertise go during this event? How could an experienced captain let his ship sail away with all his supplies on it? Could it be that all that evaporated alcohol had gone to his head? Was everyone sober enough to know they had to evacuate, but high on fumes enough to not do it in a safe, responsible way? Listen, I'm an idiot, and I'd like to think even I would be like, hey, maybe we should put the sails down and grab some food and water before we abandon ship. Lord only knows what happened to the lifeboat. One would think it had oars. I don't know much, but wouldn't a lifeboat have washed up somewhere at some point? Do they put the name of the ship on lifeboats? Maybe that's where the sea monster came into play.
And none of the other people who had been on the ship were ever found.
Nope.
None of the documents. None of the records. All of the entire family was completely gone.
And then where is the Mary Celeste now? Does it still exist?
No. It was burned.
Burned? Who burned it?
The captain of the Mary Celeste's friend. He thought it was just a curse because the guy before the guy who owned the Mary Celeste, he died on the ship.
So his friend thought maybe it was cursed.
It was cursed.
Well, actually, the Mary Celeste changed hands a few times in the years after she was found abandoned in 1872 by the De Grazia, a little less than a month after she set sail from New York. No fewer than three captains in all died prematurely on the ship. And given her previous accidents and the mysterious disappearance of Captain Briggs and his family and crew, most people did consider the ship cursed. But no one burned it up. Rather, the final owner of the ship concocted an elaborate insurance fraud scheme and intentionally ran the Mary Celeste aground in a reef near Port-au-Prince, Haiti, where she sank in 1885. But, strangers, what good would a story about a ghost ship be without an actual ghost?
And then about like a month or two later, the captain of the Mary Celeste's son was found. He was actually talking to a little girl, and people thought it was like something weird, but we don't know.
How old was the little boy?
Either 10 or 12.
Okay.
And when we see him now, he's like 13 or 14.
And what do you mean he was talking to a little girl?
He bumped into a little girl on the street of like Newport or mm-hmm. New York, and he was trying to help her find her family.
And what do people think that was?
People thought that was Rose Celeste.
The ghost of his sister? Whoa. How come they think it was the ghost of his sister and not just some alive girl?
Because they were acting like they knew each other. Ooh. Like a deep connection.
There is no Rose Celeste. If Arthur Briggs, the son of Captain Benjamin Briggs and Sarah Elizabeth, did run into the ghost of his sister, it would have been Sophia Briggs. I can't find a single speck of a source for where this part of the story came from. Look, we all have different talents, okay? My son happens to be a terrific dancer and musician. He is very funny, and he makes a mean spaghetti with clams. But one skill he does not possess, as of yet anyway, is a great memory, which perhaps means that my son is more of a writer than he thinks he is. Or it means that maybe we need to start thinking about homeschool.
So that's all I know about the Mary School.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Creepy, right?
Very creepy.
Love you.
I love you, baby.
Thanks for joining me for Strange and Unexplained. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment and Grab Bag Collab. Today's episode was written by me, Daisy Egan, researched by the Strangers Research Squad, with help from my special expert guest, Monty Egan Bloom. Editing help from Amber Hunt and audio engineering by Amanda Rossman. For early and ad-free episodes of Strange and Unexplained, check us out at patreon.com/grabbagcollab. $8 gets you early ad-free episodes of Strange and early ad-free episodes of Crimes of the Centuries from Amber Hunt. But if you love ads, you can keep them. And for just $5, you'll get Dear Daisy, a podcast about secrets, Amber Hunt's The Catalyst, and Shut the F Up, Nick Lachey, with me and Broadway sensation Ellen Marsh. Why, you can find so much content on Grab Bag for just $5, you'll think you're shopping at Shein. Check us out on Instagram at SNUPod and Grabbag Collab, and please take a minute to rate and review us on Apple or Spotify. It really helps the show out a lot. And why not visit a sponsor? If you want to suggest an episode for Strange, go to the website strangeandunexplainedpod.com and fill out the contact form. I promise to write you back, unless you're being an asshole, in which case you can get yourself a one-way ticket on the Mary Celeste, buddy. See you next time.